Come on, you're kind of missing the point of a double date. We're taking the girls dancing.
You go ahead, I'll catch up with you.
You really gonna do this again?
Well, it's a fair. I'm gonna try my luck.
As who? Steve from Ohio? They'll catch your horse. They'll actually take you.
Look, I know you don't think I can do this.
This isn't a back alley, Steve. It's war.
I know it's a war.
Why are you so keen to fight? There's so many important jobs.
What do you want me to do? Collect scrap metal in my little red wagon?
Why not?
I'm not gonna sit in the factory, Bucky. Bucky, come on. There are men laying down their lives. I got no right to do any less than them. That's what you don't understand. This isn't about me.
Right. Because you got nothing to prove. Yes, we are. Don't do anything stupid until I get back.
How can I? Taking all the stupid with you.
You're a punk.
Jerk. Be careful. Don't win the war till I get there.
This is becoming like a recurring theme with like Marvel movies now, especially with us, because like I guess maybe because of how the movie like landscape was when these first came out, nobody wanted slow paced films because like I fully agree that like the Captain America movie is a slower pace than some of the others, but now I find myself wanting that more and more after seeing all the MCU movies up to this point, where now it's just go the whole time.
And if you couldn't tell already, we are going to be discussing Captain America: The First Avenger, one of the many origin stories put out by the MCU. This one came out in 2011. It was directed by Joe Johnston. And, you know, as Kyle and I are reflecting on rewatching all the movies, we're definitely finding, you know, newer things that we loved about all of them. And this one, for me, was the fact that it was the underdog that had just a heart of gold, who wanted to do nothing but serve his country and fought to be, you know, like seen as someone who could compete. And, you know, maybe that's why I didn't like it when I first watched it, because I just remember a lot of that, like him trying to prove himself. But then watching it again, like all of that was, I mean, that's what we know of Captain America, and that's what we know of what he puts forth in his character and in his, like all of his actions against any enemy he faces.
Yeah, he's like one of the only, to me, true good guys that you can even talk about in the universe, because a lot of them, you know, they had like arrogance or they're like hot-headed, say like Tony Stark is right now, that we see where he's good, but he doesn't have like the good guy persona, you know?
Right.
He likes being the best, where Steve Rogers is just a good person who just happened to get dealt a really shitty hand in life until he got his super soldier serum. But he's an actual good person, and that's the first time we've seen someone who didn't need to go through an arc to become good, like Thor and Captain America. I mean, like Thor and Tony Stark had to do in their movies, where they went from very arrogant, very cocky people to more heroes, where Captain America just starts out as a hero. He just didn't have the physical prowess to do so.
I also forgot how many people we get to see in this movie. Like Sebastian Stan as Bucky Barnes, we get to see a lot of him. And when you watch all the other movies moving forward, he's definitely an ancillary character who just kind of sits to the side and participates. And we know him as a Winter Soldier, but I mean, you get to see him more as, you know, like his pal. So you see that origin story of their friendship as well, which explains a lot of the relationship in Civil War and why he wants to fight for him. And then we see Tommy Lee Jones. The doctor, remind me of his name.
You're not really thinking about picking Rogers, are you?
I wasn't just thinking about it. It's a clear choice.
When you brought a 90-pound asthmatic onto my army base, I let it slide. I thought, what the hell, maybe it'd be useful to you, like a gerbil. Never thought you'd pick him.
Oh! Jumping shot. Stick a needle in that kid's arm. It's going to go right through him.
Come on, girls.
Look at that. He's making me cry.
I am looking for qualities beyond the physical.
Do you know how long it took to set up this project? All the groveling I had to do in front of Senator What's-His-Name's committees?
Yes, I know. I am well aware of your efforts.
Then throw me a bone. Hodge passed every test we gave him. He's big, he's fast, he obeys orders, he's a soldier.
He's a bully.
You don't win wars with niceness, doctor.
So Stanley Tucci plays the doctor that chooses Steve Rogers for the experiment and finally gets him in to the military. And the one thing that is, I mean, it's amazing about this movie and any other movie that chooses to use the Nazi history as a basis for its storytelling. But what Tucci reminds me of is a lot of like Project Paperclip and how the U.S. like took a lot of German soldiers after World War II and brought them over to like create, you know, space travel. And they were probably experimenting with drugs, but like, there was so much of Nazi Germany obviously built into the Hydra platform, that, you know, Tucci's one of the good guys, but he's definitely one of those scientists that they stole, that Red Skull was trying to get him to perfect the super soldier for, serum for, so that he could be, the ultimate bad guy.
Yeah. Because, you know, Schmidt is just who I call him in the movie, Red Skull. He got super soldier serum, but he didn't get the perfected formula that was later created for Steve Rogers.
Which is why he has the Red Skull.
Yeah, which is why he's Mr. Deformed. And, and then we figure out he's got an Infinity Stone, say, after this whole MCU is established, that he's able to make all these Hydra weapons out of, which to me makes the film more enjoyable to watch a second time. Once you learn about all of these and where the MCU was heading, you can infer a lot more, say, from characters' motivations. Even though they may not know it's an Infinity Stone, you go, that's why he was able to get weapons out of this stupid little cube-looking thing. Literal power.
This is the first time we see a Infinity Stone in one of these films, the Tesseract.
Yes. Yeah. Like, especially so prominently. Even, because even in The Avengers, like you don't see it nearly as prominently as this film. Like, it really hones in as, like, this, almost that's the villain and not exactly Red Skull. Because what could Red Skull do if he didn't have that to begin with? It's almost like the Infinity Stone is the bad guy. Well, we just don't know until much later when we go, oh, okay, yeah, if Thanos didn't get his hands on these, he wouldn't have been able to do anything.
And so Steve Rogers, he gets the super serum. He becomes everything he wanted to be. He's taller. He's stronger. He's like super fit. Like the first challenge that he faces is going after a Hydra agent, like right after he gets the serum and like puts a t-shirt on, and like takes off after him. But we see him, and this is again one of those things that I reflected on when I first watched it. We see him participating in a lot of stage acts to kind of drum up excitement and participation for the war and support from the country. And
that's a classic like propaganda that happened on both sides.
Right, where he's got the Adolf Hitler who's sneaking behind the crowd and he knocks him out every time he pops up and he hates it. And then he finally gets the taste of war when I think it's Bucky's troop is missing in action and he has to go save him on his own, like against all orders.
Yeah, he just straight up lone wolfs it, but then they see how much he can turn the tide of battle after that. And then they finally go, oh, okay, yeah, we should probably use this super soldier for actual super soldiery things instead of making him a propaganda, you know, machine. Because we find that Howard Stark makes his shield out of vibranium because they actually don't have the movie rights to adamantium because Fox has it. Actually,
because it's an alloy, right, of the two.
Yep, and so you have like adamantium and vibranium, like say in the comics, they're like antithesis of each other, where like if both of them hit, they like cancel each other out, because vibranium, from what I remember, like absorbs energy, and adamantium like deflects energy. So then, if both of them hit each other, it's like an unstoppable force hitting an immovable object, in a sense. Where just like nothing happens, go ahead.
There's no limit to what could possibly happen if Disney and Marvel had the rights to every one of the characters within the universe. I mean, I just imagine Wolverine like colliding with the shield and splitting it in two with his claws.
Right. Well, since they bought Fox recently, maybe we'll get that one day. Maybe we'll finally see Wolverine in the movie. But back to his shield, that was strong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially since he throws it like a frisbee. What a frisbee that can come back after it hits a guy. Which, if you're throwing something that hard and that heavy and it can come back, I don't think you've knocked him out.
No, and see, there's so many different pieces to I don't know if it's inconsistencies or like not following through with the power of something. But like with this and what we'll see in the Avengers, like you just mentioned with the shield, like if you throw a shield that has that much strength, that should split a person in two, first of all. But especially with his power of what he's exerting when he tosses it. But in Avengers, when he's fighting Loki, he's like hard, you know, he's throwing punches, but it's like he's in the ring with like, you know, someone who's equally as powerful. And while Loki's a god, Loki, you know, we've seen him get his ass kicked. There's just inconsistencies as far as like power goes as we watch these movies. That was one thing that I was noticing was, you know, he in Infinity War is the one person who's able to hold the gauntlet open when Thanos is trying to close it. And so he's like, you know, I don't know if he just gained strength over the years, but in the one in Avengers, he's going like toe to toe with Loki. And I'm like, well, Loki's not even that fucking powerful. So it's interesting. It's interesting the things that they've done. And I don't want to get too much into the Avengers again, but like Thor is bleeding after a fight with the Hulk. And Thor, we've never seen Thor bleed before as a god. So it's just, I don't know if these things were just written into the movie and they sounded good for the time. But later on, as you start thinking about it, there is this blissful ignorance that they anticipate the crowd's going to have for the characters that are all glossy and, you know, starry-eyed on the screen, that we just forget all those other pieces that they wrote into those stories.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Especially to me, like this one almost starts like my like, oh, come on thing that I would see, because I see him throwing that shield and that should not bounce off like a dodgeball.
That would break. It would like just crush a sternum into dust.
Oh yeah, or like cleave you in two at least.
Yes,
you know, like if it hits you in the midsection, like you're just like you are cut in half, and your entrails should just be like flowing out, because like there's just no way. But you have to have the kiddos to see it.
Yeah,
which is probably going to happen. Or you can be like, oh no, they had Hydra body armor.
Yeah,
So they had, like, special Tesseract armor. That's why it didn't cleave them. Oh, okay, sure. Keep telling yourself that story.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But I do like the shield. Like, I like the design of it. I like the look. I thought they got it right. Having Howard Stark design it fits with, like, just the overall arc and theme of everything.
Mm-hmm.
I like that they had Howard Stark in this, because you really you basically get like almost like mini cameos of him throughout the MCU, but you really didn't actually get him as a character. Mostly, it was mostly like flashback scenes whenever Tony would be thinking about his father in Civil War. You never really had like something substantial, and this movie gave you at least something substantial about Howard.
He's one of the he presents his hovering car at the event that they go to that night, so you get to see him performing kind of like Tony is. So you get a little bit more backstory on that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So Hydra is really only prominent in the Captain America movies. I mean, I think they touch on some of it in other ones, but they're definitely prominent in the Captain America films, and reflective of, like I mentioned, the Nazis and the occult. It's not a secret that they were, like, Hitler was obsessed with finding whether it was mythological ways or spiritual ways of leading and creating the perfect race. And there was a doctor within his regime, well, I say doctor with quotes around it, Joseph Mengele, who performed experiments under the banner of Nazi progression, and he was crazy. He did really unnerving and just unnatural things to twins and to other non-willing participants that were captured, that were a part of the prisoners of their system, and he was trying to like speed up the course of human evolution. So Red Skull and Zola, who's Hugo Weaving and Toby Jones, I found a lot of that same kind of those same personas within them. And in what's interesting too is that Red Skull is he's a part of Hitler's Germany.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
he's trying to become like his own Hitler.
Yeah, he wants to even do more, say, like, than Hitler can do, which...
Yeah, doesn't think he's doing enough.
Yeah, right, yeah, because, like I almost found, like, Hydra is, like, the SS on steroids, in a sense. Yeah. Like, it's just, like they want to be the best, period, whatever it takes. But, and if anybody is not, like, the peak of the human race, like, you're just not a Hydra person, you know, if you don't think that way. But I liked how they did it that way, because it fits the theme of like World War II and Nazi Germany, and it gives you like a villain to be mad at, in a sense, because Nazis are the easiest villains to write because they're Nazis. So
right.
it gives Captain America just a villain to go after, instead of trying to make it, oh, you need to sympathize with this person. Like Marvel just went, no, like this guy's bad.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a tragic backstory where, you know, he's a misunderstood villain. No, he's a straight up bad dude.
Yeah, we understand. He's a dick.
Yeah.
From the beginning, we understand that. I mean, he goes to the house where he finds the Tesseract hidden in the Tree of Life carving or mural on the side of the wall in an estate that is run by the librarian, and not the librarian, the groundskeeper in Harry Potter, as well as he is in At World's End. He's in a lot of the like Shaun of the Dead, the Simon Pegg movies. So anyway, but that cameo was interesting. I just read the movie, I just read the book Blitz, which is about drugs in Nazi Germany, and Hitler had a personal physician that would pump him full of vitamins, and after a while, because he was going through some ailments, through some stomach issues that like prevented him from doing some speeches where he could like give all of himself. Towards the end, he was also mixing in drugs. His physician was almost like under the umbrella of, you know, I'm going to make you feel better. And he was essentially poisoning Hitler, and Hitler ended up dying a very horrible, painful death. And he was going through convulsions and his blood. At one point I read that his physician was going to do some bloodletting, which was a practice back then to just kind of let out the bad blood so that your body could produce more of the good. And his blood was literally so thick that it didn't work because of all the shit that was being pumped into him. Anyway, I found a lot of what I read in that, you know, it very interesting just on its own. But we look at, you know, the super serum and Red Skull trying to get it perfected and trying to get these injections so that he can continue perfecting. And we mentioned, you know, like Joseph Mengele trying to speed up evolution for humans, personally for himself. But he essentially was getting poisoned, by this doctor, but he felt he needed more of it. And we saw that with the Incredible Hulk, with Abomination, like his body rejected the drugs, but he wanted it more because it was feeding this need for power and this need for feeling like it was doing something. It was addressing a need for power, but it was just going the completely opposite direction. And I found that interesting. If you haven't read that book or listened to it on Audible, it is a necessary read just in general. But this goes along with, you know, the occult is always talked about with the Nazis. But the introduction of drugs within the Third Reich and crystal meth and all that stuff to make these super soldiers was very, very interesting, especially because when Hitler first started, becoming the Fuhrer, he threw out cigarettes and threw out all these things because he said the perfect human wouldn't poison themselves or put these drugs in their bodies to make them better. They would be better on their own. And ultimately, at the end, he was a fucking liar and a hypocrite because he couldn't stand up or speak on his own. And he had tremors that would run through his body. He couldn't do anything without the help of injections. And Red Skull and Zola were both a part of something similar. And again, I know I'm bringing two very separate things, but it's like, you know, it Indiana Jones. Yeah. In Indiana Jones, you know, that theme of the Nazis and the occult and trying to find old religious objects to help them, you know, control humans, and how they got a hold of the Ark of the Covenant. And then at the, you know, in the third one, they were looking for the Cup of Christ. Like all of those fit in that same kind of theme of, you know, like calling to truth that Hitler was really searching for those things. And these movies, you get to be a little bit more free with the imagination. But I just thought it was interesting tying those two together.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, and I think, I mean, hell, the movie even did a good job of like giving you a taste of history, because you learn in school, like early on, like when we talk about World War II, they go, oh yeah, the Nazis like experimented with all this stuff, or they thought about it at least. You know, mm-hmm. can it be done? You just now got a movie, in a sense, to where you can go, okay, well, what if they actually may have like discovered something fantastical? How would they have done it? And this gave them a avenue to do that. They can say, okay, what if the Nazis found a stone that literally lets you control space and like space time? You know, could you make weapons out of it? Could you do this and that? It's fun to think about and like fun to make a movie out of, especially because it makes an enjoyable villain to watch, because you don't want them to succeed. And then, what was like the action? I thought was pretty good, but I also didn't think there was much of it, like compared to the other Marvel movies. Like this was definitely like a get to know Captain America film, yes, instead of a let's watch him fight, which is in like Winter Soldier. Like that one's a watch Captain America do Captain America things, but this one is hey, we need to know who he is first as a person and like as a persona, like the Captain America persona, before we even get to say him beating the crap out of everybody.
Right, which proved to be a very good like origin story, mm-hmm. because you get to see more of why he is the way that he is and the decisions that he makes. And, you know, when he was skinny and just a scrawny little person, and we'll go into the effects that were put into that in mm-hmm. the trivia section, but he was someone who would fight, but he was really defensive. He was just waiting for someone to throw a punch. And, you know, if he could stand, he would stand, but he wasn't necessarily like throwing the majority of the punches. And so even when he was big and strong, he was still on the defensive. Mm-hmm. And to your point, in the later movies, he's so much more aggressive and on the offense when it comes to like fighting enemies and standing up for the smaller people, but he still makes a decision to stand back until it's absolutely necessary for him to step in.
Oh yeah. 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 Because he's usually never the one to throw the first punch. Unless he knows he's essentially going to war, then like he knows he has an enemy, but until he knows that someone is not a good guy, he lets them try to redeem themselves first. Usually, and go, hey, just back down. You don't have to do this. He says that a lot in the films, where he will get into a conflict with someone and just go, like, you don't have to do this. And then the fight starts, say, if someone starts punching him. Like, mm-hmm. even in Civil War, like, he continuously would tell Tony, like, don't do this. You don't have to. Like, he was usually not the one who threw the first punch ever. But damn, he finished a lot of fights, though.
Yes. I want you to tell me a little bit more about Peggy Carter. Just give me a little bit of a background on her. But I wanted to say, too, he has in those fight scenes and when they are going out to war, he has a small little crew of World War soldiers that similar to Wonder Woman. It's reflective of Wonder Woman. I know they're in different wars. I believe Wonder Woman is World War I, but they are very similar in fashion. It's like a ragtag group of people that are collective. They're, you know, I think one of them is French, but they're all very different. But they, you know, we never see him again either, but they're obviously, cause they don't live as long as he did, as he was frozen and has serum running through him. But, I thought that was, interesting. That's one of the reasons I like Wonder Woman too, was the period piece that they did and how well they did it. But tell me about Peggy Carter and Hayley Atwell was the actress who, for some reason trained really hard for this role, even though she didn't have a lot of action scenes
I guess she wanted to look like, say, she could fight if she needed to, because she's an officer with the Strategic Scientific Reserve, I think, was the actual blanket around the group that was there. And she was working on the Super Soldier project with everybody else. But she trained, 6 days a week. Mm-hmm. She wanted to look a bit more military. You know, in a sense, it's like, okay, you look that, but you didn't fight, ever. you know, and she's obviously Steve's love interest, and not only throughout this film, but always his great love, in a sense that he has had, even when she dies, he races over, and mm-hmm. funeral and everything. So it was always the person that he loved now, but. He kind of had a crush on her even before he got the serum. But then as soon as he got the serum, that's when, you know, you get the ooh la la moment from Peggy, where this should be in the trivia section, but she almost broke character. The moment when she's touching his chest, that mm-hmm. was not part of the script. She was actually so taken aback by Chris Evans' physique that she almost ruined the take. That was happening because she was touching his chest and awestruck by him. It just happened to fit, the theme really well. But she's almost been his rock, especially throughout the MCU, where he always has something to fight for. That woman is his thing that he fights for. You know, it's not just the world that can be in danger. It could be Peggy that's also in danger because of that.
It's her, but mm-hmm. it's because of who she was and what she fought for. It's not because he loved her. I think that there was a lot of back and forth with people in regards to Peggy Carter, moving forward, when she dies, when, you know, he gets together with her niece or granddaughter or whatever. Yeah. It's not like he was looking at because they never did anything. They didn't even get to dance, for fuck's sake, but
you're supposed to go on a date.
Right. And they postpone it as he's barreling into the fucking Arctic. But the idea of her being, like you said, the rock, the reason he fights is she's just a symbol to him, someone mm-hmm. who believed in him and, you know, continually gave him words of encouragement and helped him feel important. Yeah. And that's one thing that my wife and I really like about certain movies. One of the best movies with no romantic story, is Rogue One. One of the most recent anyway, but the idea of a strong female lead who doesn't have a love interest in the movie. And even at the end, her and the male lead in the movie are just hugging each other when the planet blows up. But there's no kiss. There's no I love you. I enjoy those. So that I didn't see them that. I mean, he definitely was attracted to her, but mm-hmm. he was a virgin, and he never made a move on her. It was all those moments where him just expressing, "Yeah, I've never talked to a woman this long. I've never mm-hmm. been this close to a woman."
Yeah.
He did make out with that receptionist, and it did make Hayley Atwell jealous when mm-hmm. he's about to go in. So there was a little bit of that, but they didn't play on that much longer either.
No, it's almost over the course of the MCU, the idea of Peggy is what he likes, mm-hmm. but maybe not her specifically. But if someone has the same type of character as Peggy did, that's what he's attracted to, because her granddaughter or grandniece or niece or whatever exhibits a lot of those qualities that Peggy originally had, and that's where he starts becoming attracted to her. So he wants a Peggy, but doesn't need Peggy.
Yeah, it's the old school. It's the patriotism and the love for hard work and dedication and integrity and like he's attracted to a 1920s, 1930s person.
Even like who old fashioned almost.
Yeah, who wants to stand right? Exactly. Like when he wakes up in the Avengers, or even in Captain America at the end, like how he addresses people is very cordial and professional and. People just aren't used to it in current times. You started talking about her molesting his chest. Let's go into the trivia with that. So let's transition into that. Chris Evans has played multiple superheroes. So he was Johnny Blaze in Fantastic Four.
Marvel hero too, as well.
Yep. Yes. Which has been played also by Michael B. Jordan in the newer one, which... even though I've stated I have a gutter palate, I did not like that movie.
I will never rewatch that film.
That movie was, there was nothing okay about that, but that's, we're not awful. Reflecting on that.
That is the podcast for that episode. What's our opinion? It's awful.
It's done. It's over. Scott Pilgrim versus the World, which is one of my favorites. He plays, he's a super villain. But that is one of the funniest characters that I've ever seen him play. And he's only in it for like, I don't know, 5 minutes.
Yeah. But he's got terrific range as an actor.
Well, and he was comedy starting off. And when he was in Not Another Teen Movie, which we talked about in the episode for Christ's sake, he was like, you know, he was built. He was a good looking guy. He was confident. He was a great actor. But he... you know, he knew going into that movie he wanted to put on some weight. And then the expectation of being a superhero, which he was not comfortable going into being Captain America because, you know, he was not ready to be that famous.
Right, yeah. Yeah, he declined the role 3 times.
Yeah.
It took Robert Downey Jr. to actually convince him, actually have a meeting with him. Go like, dude, like, what's the matter with you? You're offered like a superhero job and you're rejecting it. Like, come on.
Dude, what a fucking meeting. Are you serious? You're an actor he was in some like really good movies, some of them indie, but like he was in a movie called Sunshine with Cillian Murphy. And like he was in some like Snowpiercer, which was actually after the Avengers. Mm-hmm. But he was getting attached to things. But to be called in to Robert Downey Jr., who's already now massively well-known for Iron Man and Iron Man 2, but also a star of the 80s, you know, who had all that shit happen to him. And now he's sitting in a room going, listen, man, you should take on this role where you're going to be super famous. And just being on the other end of that, being like, well, I don't know. I get it. I mean, laymen. We're people who don't participate or aren't a part of Hollywood at all. And again, I don't know if you and I have talked about it, but it's not easy, I'm sure, to be famous and to walk around and go get Starbucks and have like 80 people take pictures of you. And you just left the house after you popped a zit. You know, it's not easy to do that. So I can't imagine. And now Chris Evans will forever be known as Captain America, regardless of anything else that he does. Mm-hmm. So it would have been rough. It's just an interesting thing to think about the two of them sitting there going, hey, man, you should think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you should. Yeah. Yeah. Because like I think RDJ told him, like, you may not think this role is like right to do. He's like, but then you become Captain America. You can get any other movie role you want. Mm-hmm. After that, like, you can do small films after this because you're Captain America. You can just command that. You don't have to go into big blockbusters ever again, but once you get a break like this, he gets so much more freedom. Like Snowpiercer, not something he's going to be known for, but he didn't take that role for the money. You can definitely know it was probably something that he actually wanted to do, but it made it much easier for him to do.
Mm-hmm.
Since people actually know who he is now.
The effects that were put onto him as the underdog when he was a smaller guy, I still find incredible. It was done by a company named Lola. And what they did, they put marks on different actors and actresses so that Chris could, like, look up to them and look at those marks, much like they did with the Hulk and Thanos with Josh Brolin and Mark Ruffalo when they put, like, the heads on them and the actors had to look up at them, even with Vin Diesel as Groot. So they had to do different things to ensure that even if it was digitally, and, you know, if it was an effect digitally, that he was able to like look up. And so they had those shots of him, you know, reacting and being that small. Mm-hmm. And so there was also spots where his head was like grafted onto a different body. So there was multiple effects used. I just thought it was really cool. And I forgot watching it how well it was done.
Mm. Ooh. Still talking about Chris Evans. He was only paid $300,000 for the role.
Whew.
Based on like how much they command now per film, that is mm-hmm. nothing compared to like the 20-30 million that they get now for these films. But you can now know that he did not take this role for the money, at least for the first film.
Right. I mean, after it, it's just mm-hmm. a part of it.
Yep. There was also Wolverine and Magneto were supposed to make cameos.
Yeah, I read that as well.
Mm-hmm. But rights issues, because, yeah, Fox had the rights at the time before they were bought by Disney.
Yeah, and Hugo Weaving was indifferent about the experience about shooting this movie. He enjoyed doing it, but he just said he wasn't interested in reprising his role as Red Skull. So as everyone knows, it's a different actor who did a very good job in the Infinity War. But mm-hmm. A lot of it, he didn't like playing the villain. He didn't like the makeup, which a lot of these movies, I can imagine that would be very irritating having to put on. Even Gamora, like a lot of it's just green paint, but it's hours in a chair. And I just couldn't imagine doing that. And so that was one of the reasons that he didn't want to sign back on if they were to bring back Red Skull.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like Red Skull, like, wasn't the most memorable, like, Marvel villain. So I don't think, like even Hugo Weaving would be kicking himself in the foot because, like, people don't watch Captain America for Red Skull. They watch it for, you know, Chris Evans now. So I don't think he made a bad decision by saying he didn't want to reprise his role. I think the film needed him, but the Captain America universe didn't need him, say, after that.
Right.
It just needed to move on. So it seems like this is one of the ones where Hugo was right in doing that, and he was not Terrence Howard in being an idiot and going, like, I'm not going to do this role unless you give me more money. Hugo probably just went, yeah, I'll do it. He's like, but I don't have a desire to continue, guys, but I'll do the role. And even to me, even when he doesn't have a desire to redo his role, he still acted well, still did his job. He didn't phone it in, at least from what I saw in the film. But probably because he's a professional and not a whiny little baby when it comes to contract negotiations. Terrence Howard.
Yep. Spot on impersonation of Terrence Howard, by the way, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So the Stan Lee's cameo came. He was in the crowd at one of the USO shows. And this is an exception to the tradition of him in the films where he's, up until this point, he's someone sees him as someone else. So, mistaken identity. So in this one, he was sitting in there and he was, you know, he's amongst the vets that are sitting in the crowd, which he is a vet of the US military. So it was an accurate portrayal for him, but this was, you know, we get to see him alongside, and then in the Avengers, it's a little, I think it's less prominent, his cameo, but it's, this one again was removed from the normal tradition that we had seen him in.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, here's a really kind of weird bit of trivia in terms of Hugo. I forgot this was in my notes. So, he's named Schmidt, right? In The Matrix, he's Agent Smith. The English translation of Schmidt is Smith. So maybe he's maybe this is just Agent Smith, and we're all still in The Matrix.
Yeah, we're all just plugged in.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a stretch, but I appreciate it for what it is.
It's not bad.
So what I saw in the digital version of this that I have is the after credit scene. One of the after credit scene is literally just a trailer for the Avengers.
Oh yeah.
It's not a, like a, here's an introduction, which I think there was one. I can't remember, because the thing that stood out to me was that I just saw a actual trailer, which was very weird.
Yeah, that was, yeah, especially when we do get a scene with, like, Nick Fury and, going, no, I was at that game, you know, so this isn't this time, and, like, they screwed up, but yeah, seeing, like, just a trailer made me go, what? What do you mean?
Well, and I guess the end of the movie does kind of lead into it, where he's in current time, so they unthaw him, but it's not an after credit. It just kind of goes into it. So we see Captain America be introduced to, like, America today, and then he meets Nick Fury, and then it's kind of like, hey, here's what's going on.
Yep, I got a mission for you.
Right. So that leads us into... what our next episode will be about. Yes, bringing together everybody for the first time in the movie directed by Joss Whedon, The Avengers, in 2012. And we're going to find out, I don't know, I mean, you may not have enjoyed it as much as I did, but in rewatching this movie, it was another one where I can remember certain parts and just being kind of like blah with them. And then I remember... like the Chitauri and all the big major scenes in this movie was another really, really good one and a home run, I think, for the MCU.
This was like the first Marvel popcorn movie for me, where I can sit back on my couch, have popcorn, and go, I'm about to watch a damn good movie.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
So join us next time, where Kyle and I get to sit down and discuss The Avengers. And for now, Kyle, I will say... Well, no, it's Kyle, you say something now.
Yes, I'm going to say good morning.
All right, I'm just going to say bye. Peace.
Ta-ta.